Hey everybody, welcome. This is Jackie from GirlWithNoName.com, and I'm here today with none other than the awesome Mike Geary, the author of my personal number one fitness Bible, and the book that got me solidly on the road to getting and keeping my smoking set of abs. In case you haven't guessed which book I'm talking about by now, it's the one called The Truth About Six-Pack Abs, and it's one of the hottest sellers on the internet. And if you're wondering why, I'll tell you. It's because it is the truth, and it works, and I'm living proof. Before I found truth about abs, I was one of those people that worked out like mad, always doing the same things, and always getting the same results, which were basically no results. Then I got my hands on it, and everything just came together for me. So you guys really have to listen in here, because Mike's got a lot of important things to say. They say there's no magic pill, and they're right. It takes work, but it takes the right kind of work to get there, and the info in Truth About Abs is the answer, bar none. So I'm sure you can tell by now that I'm completely stoked about having Mike here, and I think this is quite an honor, and I can't wait to get started grilling him. So welcome, Mike.
Thanks so much, Jackie. I appreciate your kind words, and I'm glad you finally tracked me down.
Yeah, me too. All right, so let's get down to it, because I know you're a busy guy, and I want to make sure you've got lots of time for lots of good info. So to start off, why don't you just tell us a little bit more about yourself and your background?
Sure. Well, I've been a personal trainer for about a decade now, and got certified as a nutrition specialist about 6 or 7 years ago also. And I actually used to work as a scientist as well, so I have a good sort of chemistry and biology background and all of that. So it makes me very scientific-minded about when I'm thinking about nutrition and exercise programs and such. I ended up writing The Truth About Six-Pack Abs because when I was working as a trainer, I'd say about 90% of the questions I got on a regular basis were always about, losing stomach fat or getting six-pack abs. And so I knew there was demand for that topic, and it was something people were confused about. And I knew there was a lot of fads and gimmicks on the topic, with diet pills and infomercial gadgets and things like that. So I figured, why don't I just put together this product, that dispels all those myths and call it The Truth About Six-Pack Abs.
Oh, right on. Well, I think that we're pretty lucky that you decided to share your vast knowledge with us, because I know that it's the thing that straightened me out and, doing the same things over and over and getting nowhere. So, and you brought up the sort of subject of myths and misperceptions about what it takes to, get lean and get a six-pack. So let me ask you the burning question that I'm sure that is on everyone's minds right off the bat, and that is, just how many crunches does it take to get six-pack abs?
And I know that's a loaded question, because
the answer
is zero. There can be a time or place for certain variations of crunches, and I put them in some of my routines, but I make sure to balance them out with exercises that work the entire core and work your lower back to make sure there's balance there. But to be honest, I don't even do any crunches in my routines anymore. I used to years ago, and most of my clients, we don't either. And, I'll kind of explain as we get into it more as to why that is. But I think as you saw that it's a pretty ineffective exercise and doesn't really – most importantly, doesn't stimulate your metabolism, compared to doing other types of full body exercises.
Right, right. Okay, so let's quickly touch on the late night infomercials, the ab stimulators and the ab rollers and all that stuff. So those are, you can't just plug into a machine and sit there and let your abs melt, let that melt off your stomach so your abs show, or you can't just do a bunch of ab roller crunches. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, millions of people fall for those infomercial products all the time. And, the bottom line is you people are searching for the quick fix and without actually changing their lifestyle. And it's just not going to happen. You can't sit on your couch and just strap on an ab belt, and because there's some electric current, it's like somehow melting fat. That just isn't biologically possible. So, it does take some hard work, like you said, and it takes real exercise and real nutrition and a real lifestyle shift. And, another important thing to realize is that even all of those ab gadgets where you might actually be doing an exercise, such as, you know, these types of ab machines that, you know, they say makes a more biomechanically correct crunch or something like that. Again, okay, maybe you're doing some exercise in that case as opposed to the ab belts where you're not. But still, you're just working the abdominals. And that doesn't do anything to burn fat, and that doesn't do anything to stimulate your metabolism. So in the big picture, I mean, it's still a waste of time.
Right, right. Okay, so then what about those little pills, those little fat-burning pills and the acai berry supplements that promise that just take these and the fat just melts off of you? Let's hear what you have to say.
Yeah, that's another problem with, you know, just human nature is that everyone wants the pill that's going to solve their problem. I mean, if someone could make a pill and for any you know problem in life and say that it could make you rich, people are going to buy that pill. I mean, look at the pharmaceutical industry. Everyone, you know, wants to take drugs or pills to accomplish something. And it just doesn't work that way. I mean, especially, you don't want to get me started on like the acai berry, all that stuff, because it first of all, with those, I mean, it's just an antioxidant. And these unscrupulous marketers are claiming that it's a weight loss miracle when it's not. It's just, you know, it's just a berry, an antioxidant. So that doesn't help you lose weight at all. So I would, you know, I would advise people just to forget about all the pills, forget about, you know, supplements for a second, and let's focus on lifestyle shift and you know, types of exercise programs, nutrition, motivation, mindset, all the stuff that really matters.
Right. Okay, well, now that we've established that crunches alone and anything that promises an overnight miracle isn't the answer, I mean, just how hard is it to get six-pack abs? I think I've heard a lot of people that just think it's a completely unattainable and far too lofty a goal for the average person. I mean, I know I've done it. So, but like on an average basis, what do you have to say about that?
I'd say that almost anybody can reduce their body fat percentage enough to get a visible six pack. And because that's what it's about. I mean, everybody has it. It's just reducing. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a degree of it is how developed the abdominal muscles are. Mm-hmm. But most of it is just how much body fat you're carrying around. And pretty much anybody can do it. You know, I really hate to hear people blame their, you know, genetics and things like that. I mean, I've trained guys in the past who were obese, and you know, once they shift their lifestyle and make fitness a priority in their life, and you know, figure out how to eat and how to train and how to get everything under control to make this goal possible. It's really easy. I think it's easy. And I've seen people who are making it difficult, you know, once they get everything right, make it easy.
Right, right. So it boils down to total body fat, too. It's like you can't spot reduce by, again, doing a bunch of crunches or doing a bunch of stuff specifically for your stomach. It's about total body fat on your body. You have to get your whole body lean for those abs to actually pop out.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So, okay, let's get down to it. What kind of exercises does it take to get the right work done in the right way?
Well, this part always surprises people, especially since the title of my program is Truth About Six-Pack Abs. But the ab exercises themselves are actually the least important part of the program. And they're the most, I mean, they're probably 5 minutes per session, you know, out of maybe like a 45-minute workout, say, for example. I mean, it's really the least important part. The most important part is what are you doing to really stimulate a metabolic change in your entire body? And that is, you know, full body exercises that work the largest muscle groups in your body and not just focusing on the abs. So, I mean, really working your legs and back and chest and, you know, all of the major muscle groups really, really hard, really got to work your body thoroughly. Mm-hmm. And to get that metabolic change as opposed to just trying to focus on a bunch of different ab exercises, because that's really not what it's about.
So, for instance? What kind?
So, like, for example, you know, some of the exercises that are most important are multi-joint compound exercises for both the upper and lower body. Some of them can even combine upper and lower body in the same exercises. Deadlifts and squats and lunges are three of the most important.
Mm-hmm.
There are exercises like dumbbell squat and presses where you're working the upper body and lower body in the same exercise. There are exercises like this one always cracks me up whenever I'm in a gym. I do an exercise called one-arm snatches or two-arm snatches sometimes with
I love those
either yeah, with either kettlebells or dumbbells. I actually prefer kettlebells over dumbbells, but occasionally I'll do them with dumbbells too. And it's essentially, you know, it's taking a weight from floor level and snatching it up over your head in one motion. And there's swings also, which are sort of like in between that, where you're swinging the weight up to head level. And those everybody, when they see me doing them at the gym, a lot of people who haven't really, you know, studied hardcore training or just more advanced training have never seen these exercises. You know, to somebody who's been studying training, you know, they'd be a normal exercise. But a lot of the general population has never seen these. And everybody, the first thing people always ask me is, wow, you know, I've never seen that before. What body part does that work? So everybody has this mentality that an exercise has to work one specific muscle group. And, you know, they're thinking, well, what does that work, the shoulders, or does that work the biceps? And I'm like, no, you know, it works almost your entire body. And so that's a something that always sort of shocks people. And it's because you're working your body in a really challenging way and working multiple muscle groups in a multi-joint fashion, you really – it stimulates a metabolic you know, it triggers your metabolism much more than just – you know, doing some bicep curls or, you know, doing any single joint exercises or machine exercises, which is what most people tend to gravitate to when they don't really know how to do a lot of these exercises, is because those are the simple things to do, you know, that might be sort of obvious.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I was also one of those people that was like, what? I'd never done a squat press. I'd never done a clean and press. This is before, you know, way before I was a trainer and all that stuff, and before I really just really got heavy into it. I'd never done a clean and press, and I'd never even heard of a deadlift. And for me, it's amazing how much you can actually feel your core engaging and really, really working when you do these moves, too. It's not just about, for me anyway, for hitting all these different muscle groups at the same time and getting my metabolic rate up. It's about, I mean, that's hard work for your abs.
Oh, well, yeah.
And everything else, you know. So,
exactly.
I mean,
and when you're doing a one-arm snatch or a two-arm clean and press or even swings, these exercises are working your abs in addition to the rest of your body. I mean, they're not, you know, directly contracting your abs like a specific ab exercise would, like a crunch, but it's different. You know, it's working your entire core.
Yeah.
As well as, you know, working most of your body.
Yeah. I mean, before I read Truth About Abs, I'd never even done anything besides, you know, bicep curls and tricep kickbacks and get on the machine, do some chest presses and some flies and think I'm getting a real good workout. My heart rate doesn't get up and I'm not breathing hard. And I look back on that and I'm just like, wow, you know, what made me think that was actually a really good workout? So, and just because I'm bringing up machines right now, on the subject of machines, I know that you recommend free weights like barbells and dumbbells and kettlebells over exercises done on the machines. So, but can you share with us why that is?
Yeah, so machines, like I said, a lot of beginners especially tend to gravitate towards machines because they're easy and it's sort of obvious what to do. There might be like a picture on the machine as to what you do. And if they don't have a lot of training background, it just tends to be what people gravitate towards. But it doesn't work your body nearly as hard because the weight is already stabilized for you.
Right.
All you have to do is push it or pull it and, you know, whatever the type of exercise is. And that's a world of difference from free weight exercises where your body has to do the work of all your stabilizer muscles have to get involved and stabilize the you know, the weight during your exercise. So you burn more calories, you work your muscles harder, and you just generally, overall, will get a much better response with free weight exercises. But I don't, you know, I'm not completely against anything. I mean, there's certain things, but I would say, you know, use a rule of like 95% of your exercises are free weight. Maybe you can throw some machines in for 5% of the time for variety. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, one possible benefit on certain types of machine exercises, you can get a higher level of force production because the weight is stabilized for you already. You might be able to lift a little bit more weight and get more force production. And that'd be more of like a bodybuilding application than necessarily like a fat loss application,
right,
though.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't worry too much about machines. I'd focus mostly on free weights, but I'm not saying, you know, 100% stay away from them all the time. You know, I use them occasionally just for variety mostly.
Right. I think the only time I've been on a machine actually since I've read The Truth About Abs is a ham curl machine, just because I've got some really bad hamstrings and I'm trying to strengthen them because I think they're overstretched. But that's pretty much the only machine that I really prefer, getting the feeling of getting under the bar for squats, or, you know, doing some clean and presses, or throwing a kettlebell or dumbbell around for swings or snatches. And it, for me, it's more fun. It's just more fun, as well as, you know, once I started doing these exercises the way they're supposed to be done, I just, the changes in my body were just like, I was like totally shocked. Like, holy moly, look what's happening here. I've got delts now. I've got deltoids. I've actually got biceps. I've been doing bicep curls forever. What the heck? You know, and abs.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm not stuck in that frustrating rut where I was before of just like a million bicep curls and chest, machine chest flies and kind of getting nowhere, you know. So I wanted to talk a little bit about age too, because I had someone ask me, you know, if it's harder to do over the age of 40, which surprises me personally because I'm over 40 and it doesn't really stop me. I did it. So, but why don't you talk to me a little bit about you know, personal age of the person and if it gets harder or even impossible the older the person gets.
No, I mean, I don't think it gets harder. I mean, even though I'm not, you know, over 40 myself, I'm 34 right now, but I can tell you I'm in a lot better shape now at 34 than I was at 21. But yet the funny thing is when I was 21, I remember all the 30-year-olds telling me, oh, just wait till you get over 30, you know, you're going to get a gut, and I'm in better shape now. You know, same thing, I mean, I'm going to be in probably better shape when I'm over 40. I'm constantly learning, constantly trying new things, and I think you can just always, you know, you definitely reach a peak, but you can always just, you know, keep trying to improve. But some of the, you know, I know guys that were obese in their 30s and are in phenomenal shape in their 40s. I know people who are in phenomenal shape in their 60s. It just takes really making fitness part of your lifestyle and making it a priority, and, you know, not making, you know, watching 6 hours of TV a day a priority, you know. So
right.
It really is just about the lifestyle. And like I said, I mean, almost age doesn't really matter to an extent. You can stay in great shape, way into, you know, even 60s and 70s.
Right. Okay. I've also had a couple of my women followers ask about post-childbirth weight and the actual flat stomach, six-pack sort of look. What's your experience with you know, new mothers or older mothers or whatever? Is it impossible to get that pre-childbirth body back, or even attain something they didn't have before childbirth and get that six-pack?
I mean, it's definitely attainable, and I've seen just tons of examples of women who have gotten back into tremendous shape after having kids. You know, obviously there's some major physiological changes that happen when they're pregnant, and, you know, they're naturally going to, even the women that don't gain much weight, you're going to gain a little bit of body fat, and some women might get, you know, the stretch marks and things like that, but you can definitely, you know, if you're doing things right, get back to at least a flat stomach. I mean, you know, you might not be as, if you had a perfect body, it might not, you know, be able to get back to, you know, the perfection that it once was, but I've seen some great examples of women who have, you know, who have gained the weight with pregnancy, And, you know, a few months after they have the kids, you know, they get back into fitness big time and just totally get back into amazing shape.
Yeah. I mean, it all still boils down to perseverance and dedication, too. You know, I mean, you can't try for 3 weeks and give up. You have to stick with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Hey, since we're on the subject of working out women, do you mind if we go off on just a minor tangent for a sec? I preach this a lot, but to be quite honest, it's what I read personally in Truth About Abs that woke me up to this years ago, but now it's become a major, major pet peeve of mine, and that is women who won't lift heavy because they don't want to bulk up. So please share your thoughts on this one.
Yeah, this is one of my pet peeves too, and as much as I preach it, a lot of times I find that I have to, the only way I can convince women to believe me on this one is to have another female, preach it for me. So like, because, you know, they don't want to, they think, well, you're a man and this isn't going to apply to me, this heavy lifting. And, but I don't agree with that at all, because now, and I'm not going to say this applies to everyone. There are a lot of women out there who have totally figured this out and are getting themselves into great shape because they're doing it right now. But the biggest mistake I've seen, I used to see all the time when I trained people in the gyms, was probably 90% or more of women don't, when they're doing resistance training, they don't train to their level to challenge their bodies, you know, to challenge their muscles enough to create a metabolic stimulus for change. So,
right.
You know, every woman I've, you know, had do, say, like a chest press with dumbbells, they go to grab like the 8-pound dumbbells, and I'm like, no way, we got to at least start with 20s. And then that's still too light. And then the next thing you know, they're doing 30s, and it's like, you know, and it's, they were never, so they were using 8 pounds, and in one session, just by trying, you know, they're doing 30s, and they could probably still move up in weight because they were just never challenging themselves enough, because they have this fear of bulking up, and that's just not going to happen. I mean, first of all, there are certain types of training programs when you get really heavy. I mean, I'm talking, you know, doing 2-rep, 3-rep maxes, you know, like where you fail at 3 reps. I mean, that's heavy weight, and that actually doesn't build mass. I mean, the routines where you're doing 15, 20 reps per set would build more mass than when you're doing a super heavy weight for only 2 or 3 reps. Now, I'm not saying, you know, most people actually, that's very advanced training. Most people, you know, aren't at the level where they can do 2 to 3 rep maxes for, you know, safely. So I'm not saying I'm recommending it. I'm just, you know, saying the extreme end of that, the heaviest lifting actually doesn't build mass at all. And also, when I was, of all of the women I think back to that I trained, the ones that were in the best shape and had the leanest, you know, best bodies were the ones that weren't afraid to train heavy with resistance training. And that's, you know, that's not just, when I say resistance training, so it's not just weightlifting. It could be body weight training too, you know, pull-ups, push-ups, dips, things like that. But they weren't afraid to train heavy, and because of that, they got results. I mean, I even had a few females who were deadlifting, you know, 175 pounds. And, I mean, that's a lot of weight for most women, and they were not bulky. I mean, they were the leaner ones. So, you know, my point is you've got to train your muscles hard enough through resistance training to actually make your body need to change. You've got to force a change in your body, and that's not going to happen using 3 or 8 pound dumbbells, you know.
Yeah, you got to feel it. You got to be able to feel it, really feel it.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think some of it might be mindset as well. Women were brought up to believe that we're delicate and, you know, we're not supposed to do anything that makes us sweat and, you know, oh, I'm a woman, I can't lift that heaviness. And I've found with most of my clients, it only takes a couple of weeks to really show them that, yes, you can. Really,
yeah.
Really can. And then once that mindset thing flips, you know, the sky's the limit at that stage.
And let me point out another thing with the heavy lifting. another thing females don't have to worry about with heavy lifting is that it all has to do with your nutrition too and your calorie intake. That if your calorie intake is where it needs to be, it is impossible to gain muscle to the point where you get bulky. I mean, you have to be taking in a surplus of calories to gain muscle mass like that. So if you're staying sort of, you know, at your maintenance or slightly below your maintenance for caloric intake, training heavy is just going to help stimulate your metabolism. It's not going to add bulk.
Yeah, and I mean, chemical enhancement is one of the things that gets the women you see in the magazines bulky.
Exactly.
You know, don't look at them. Just, if you're not taking chemical enhancements, let's just call it that, there's not much chance of you getting that bulky. So, okay, there's one thing I want to make sure we absolutely bring up, and that is proper form. I mean, some of these exercises are a bit more complicated than, you know, what I used to do, my typical bicep curl. And I know Toothwort Abs is comprehensive with explanations and pictorial demonstrations, but what if someone just needs a bigger hand to hold than pictures and text?
Yeah, so this was something, you know, I came to realize in recent months. And, you know, even though I do the best job I can to, you know, describe all of the exercises, you know, in the actual manual and give thorough descriptions of them and pictures, everything, a lot of people still want to see, you know, they want to see it in motion. They want to learn all of the little nuances of each exercise. And so what I ended up doing was I've become good friends with an expert doctor of physical therapy over the last year. And so I hired him to shoot videos of every single exercise, touch on all of the pointers on form and, you know, all of the important nuances of every exercise and just show everything in perfect form. And the guy is a genius in physical therapy. I mean, he's helped fix actually a problem I had with really tight IT bands. I've totally gotten over that now. But so what we did was put together this video center that shows every exercise that's in the Truth About Abs manual. And I mean, you know, it's probably over 100 exercises. Shows the workouts too, like how you put the exercises together into a workout and sets and reps and rest periods. So
yeah,
it's pretty encompassing, and you know, I think he did a great job on it. And so yeah, that's part of the program too that people can buy separately.
Yeah, yeah. When I heard about it, I immediately got myself in there to take a look at it, and I just thought it was absolutely mind-blowingly awesome, like just fantastic. Like, it takes every exercise and breaks it down to, like, this is exactly how you do it, and this is why you do it, and this is the pitfalls you must watch out for. And what his name is, Dr. Kareem Samhouri, is that right?
Yep.
Did I pronounce it right?
Yeah, you did.
Okay, good. Yeah, he's absolutely brilliant at demonstrating those and explaining it clearly and concisely. So I think that for anybody that is serious about, you know, getting the six-pack and getting lean and working the Truth About Six-Pack Abs program, this is an absolute must-have accompaniment, in my mind anyway. So you guys who are listening, I'll make sure you guys have a link at the end of our chat, but for now, let's just keep moving on. So I just wanted to ask you as well about everybody's favorite villain these days, cardio. You know, first of all, I want to make sure that everyone's clear on what exactly cardio means, because there seems to be a lot of confliction out there.
Yeah, and it's kind of a term that's used vaguely, and I mean, because to be honest, you can turn a weight training workout into cardio. I mean, if you're elevating your heart rate, you're training your heart. I mean, it's cardiovascular.
Right.
You don't have to be on a treadmill or an exercise bike for it to be cardio, and that's what my workouts are all based on, because, you know, I think exercise bikes and treadmills that go nowhere are just mind-blowingly boring, and yeah. I never want to do that stuff. So I like more interesting workouts. So I combine things, even if it's bodyweight exercises, into cardio. And, you know, anything you can do that really stimulates your heart rate, that's training your heart, I mean, could be labeled cardio.
Right, right. So people who are out there saying, don't do cardio, cardio is evil, they're usually referring to that slow, boring, treadmill kind of walking for hours and hours kind of cardio. They're not actually saying, don't do anything to get your heart rate up.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, yeah, so, I mean, what it boils down to is, yeah, you should do some form of cardio. You should get your heart rate up and get your cardiovascular working. Am I right?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, everybody is going to, I mean, we'll talk about this in a minute, but I'm not totally against steady-state cardio. But also, you know, I show people ways to do their workouts without having to be on a treadmill for an hour. And, you know, you get the resistance training, but you do the resistance training in a high enough intensity fashion that acts as your cardio too. I mean, you know, with the way that we can put things together in supersets, in circuits, in tri-sets, all of these ways we can combine exercises, I mean, you'll be more out of breath and your heart rate will be higher than if you were on a treadmill.
Yeah, I love supersets and super circuits and that kind of thing for training, because not only does it get your heart rate up and get you a good burn, but it saves time. You're not just sitting around resting all the time.
Exactly.
You know, waiting for your next set to come up. So it's like just move on to the next exercise and rest one body part while the other body part's, you know, working, that kind of thing. So this boils down to that cardio is not counterproductive. It's something that you need to do. It's just a matter of how you do it. So you're saying to take weight training and step it up a notch to get your heart rate up.
Yeah, so it doesn't mean that everybody's going to be different, and it doesn't mean that everyone has to do the same type of workout. So, I'm not totally bashing steady-state cardio, such as a treadmill or an exercise bike or going outside and going for a long jog. Personally,
you
know,
that because I love running personally.
Yeah,
but anyway,
I think there's benefits to it, but for somebody who wants to maximize their time and get the most efficient workout in the least amount of time, there are better ways you can do it. And here's another big thing to keep in mind. I'm not going to say don't do steady state cardio, because that doesn't apply to everyone. For one example, there are certain types of people that just don't like resistance training. They just don't like the feel of it. They're just never going to get into it. But they love going out and jogging. So I'm not going to say don't do that, because that is what they're going to be most consistent at. That's what they're going to enjoy. And they're going to do, you know, most regularly and not miss. If they hate resistance training, then why am I going to say, no, you've got to only do resistance training and never, you know, steady state cardio? Because they're never going to be consistent with that, because they don't like it. But I do think a lot of people have never really given it a chance, though. And there's a way to mix both into your life. You know, if you do like the jogging and that makes you feel good, and, you know, then go out and do it. Personally, I'm not big into that. I like hiking and, you know, I like getting outside and doing active things like hiking, mountain biking, skiing, things that I enjoy. I've never been a jogger myself. I just, for some reason, with my body type or whatever, I just don't enjoy it. So that's not something that's going to work for me. But mountain biking works for me. But also, I think that everybody, regardless of if you like it or not, should get into at least some resistance training, because it's so important for strengthening your bones and, you know, increasing your lean muscle mass to maximize your metabolism. And there's just so many benefits to it.
Right. Just to stay on the subject of cardio for one more minute, what about high-intensity interval training, what's been known as HIIT? Do you recommend that?
I do, and that's actually, I recommend that more than I do steady-state cardio. I think you can get a much more efficient workout done in a shorter time period.
Can you explain a little bit about what it is exactly?
Yeah, so it's just working at intervals instead of at higher and lower intensities. I also think there's a increased benefit to strengthening your heart, and I actually had an entire course on this topic about the increases on how interval training can actually strengthen your heart more than steady-state training, such as jogging. But like I said, I'm not going to say don't jog if that's
right.
what you like. Mix that in. But you've got to make sure that you're mixing in other forms of training that are training your heart at totally different heart rate ranges. The one problem that I can see that people get into is, say, the only form of exercise they ever do is going out and jogging or at the same pace all the time or going on a treadmill or exercise bike and just going on that same pace all the time. So they get in that, you know, they get to a certain heart rate range that they're training their heart, and that's just what they do for an hour or whatever it may be. As opposed to interval training where you know, you might take the intensity up pretty high for like a minute, and then you'll take it down low as a recovery interval set for, say, a minute or two.
And this
and then
can be on like a bicycle or running or something like that. We're not talking
about
weight.
Yeah, it can be, you know, it can be with a lot of things. You know, you can do it on a treadmill. You can do it on an exercise bike or any other cardio machine. Or you can do it with something like a jump rope. You know, you jump rope really hard for a minute, and then you rest for a minute or two and you know, as your recovery interval, and then you go at it again. There's a lot of different ways to do it. The difference is if you're training at – so let's take the example of the jogger who jogs at the same pace, and let's say their heart rate, you know, stays at 130 beats per minute the entire time. Well, you're only training your heart at that one range. Now, with interval training or even to the most extreme extent, sprinting, which I love to do sprint training – You're going at a much higher intensity level, and this is assuming that someone can do a higher intensity level, which we can touch on because it might not be for beginners. But now let's say you're during the higher intensity, you're bringing your heart rate up to 160 beats per minute, and then you're going on a recovery interval that might bring it down to 100. So you're ranging between 100 to 160 during your training, and it's going everywhere in between, instead of that 130 beats per minute that you're just training at constantly and never shifting.
Right.
So there, you know, that is a big difference in how your heart has to respond to that and strengthen and be, you know, ready for stress that happens in everyday life.
Right, exactly. What if someone, though, is just starting out or has quite a bit of weight to lose and can't really manage anything, you know, really high intensity quite yet? What do they do then? Like, how do they build up to this?
Sure. Well, in that case, I'll usually, if they're not really ready for higher intensity interval training yet, what I generally recommend to them is a mixture of resistance training, because almost anybody, even someone who has been sedentary and is maybe even obese, can do resistance training, and they're going to actually get a lot of benefits out of it for increasing their metabolism too. And then combine that with some form of lower intensity cardio that they can do, whatever they can do. Maybe it's just getting outside and going for a half an hour walk.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be all they can do until they drop some of the weight and get in better shape. And then the more advanced you get, in better shape you get, you're going to be able to start training more intensely with more advanced routines, even to the extent where when you get in really good shape, you can train at the highest intensity stuff possible, like, you know, all-out wind sprints.
Right.
And that's when you can get really, really, you know, low body fat percentages and get really ripped, is when you're able to just train with that super high intensity with the most advanced stuff.
Yeah, I do a lot of that as well. On this note, what about the weight training moves? There's quite a few in the Truth About Abs that are quite a bit more complex. So while we're talking about someone who is inexperienced or has quite a bit of weight to lose, I mean, some of these moves are pretty complex. So if they're too difficult for them to achieve, or just from inexperience, or just the fact that their current size gets in the way, how can they get there, get to where they need to be to do these moves?
Yeah, so there is a lot of more advanced exercise in there, but there's also plenty of multi-joint exercises where you can work your entire body with pretty simple moves, you know, like any form of chest pressing, whether it's dumbbells, barbells, you know, flat, incline, whatever it may be, you know, any beginner can do that. Any beginner can do, even if they can't do pull-ups yet, can do lat pull-downs or horizontal rows or dumbbell rows. And these are all multi-joint exercises that work, you know, all of the biggest muscle groups. You know, almost any beginner can do a body weight squat. You know, sure, they may not be able to get under a heavy barbell and do barbell squats yet or do heavy, you know, deadlifts, because those are, you know, especially deadlifts, they're pretty advanced. You know, you need, first of all, you need to learn. It takes a lot of technique to make sure you get them right and not hurt yourself. So you start with easy stuff like bodyweight squats, bodyweight lunges. I mean, anybody can do these things as a beginner, and just progress from there as you get stronger and as you get leaner.
Right, right. Okay, great. So it does boil down to that, regardless of, you know, who you are or how old you are or what your current weight is or if you have kids or not, it really just comes down to dedication and commitment as well. I mean, you really do have to stick with it. It's not something you just work on for a week and then, oh, I don't see my abs. I haven't lost 40 pounds, so I give up. You know, so it's something that's really worth sticking with. And I wanted to ask you this, because one person asked me this, and I'm just going to say it verbatim. She asked, is it possible that I am just not physically able to get a six-pack no matter what I do, including working the Truth About Six-Pack Abs program to the letter?
Well, I would say that she already has a six-pack, because everybody does. You know, I mean, my 8-year-old nephew has six-pack abs. The reason you can see him is because he doesn't have any body fat yet, you know?
Right.
So, so that's where, so I will say something here that it is possible that some people may not reduce their body fat levels enough to where they see their abs, even if they're doing the hard workouts and they're doing it religiously, because if their diet is not where it needs to be, if their nutrition is horrendous, even if they think they're eating healthy, but they're kind of being fooled by, like, you know, processed diet foods and things like that, and they're inadvertently eating more calories than they think, or, you know, they're eating junk that's stimulating cravings, and they're not going to get lean enough to see their abs because their nutrition isn't there no matter how hard they're working out.
Right.
But I think everybody can do it if you get every aspect right, the training, the nutrition, you know, the mindset, and actually making a shift in your lifestyle. Anybody can do it.
Right, right. Okay. So would you say that there are people out there this program just totally won't work for, or that it just isn't right for? I mean, I have a certain group of people in mind myself, but, like, what would you say about that?
I'd say no, because, and this is kind of one of my pet peeves, is, you know, sure, there are some people that might not be able to do the advanced routines, but there are some basic beginner stuff that I show people in there, and it's the concepts too. It's not just a specific workout routine. It's the concept of knowing, you know, the types of multi-joint full body exercises to do, and adjusting that to what you can do, what you have available, you know, what you can do personally, working around maybe any injuries or things like that. And it's the whole nutritional philosophy. You know, that can apply to anyone regardless of current, you know, physical capabilities. Anybody can change their nutrition around and get that part of their life under control. So I think it can, you know, there's definitely things that can apply to anyone. And one of my pet peeves in the past is someone that says, well, I can't do, you know, I read your program and I can't do it because this one exercise I can't do.
Yeah.
And that kind of, you know, that bothers me because it shows that they're giving up without, it's not about being able to do every single exercise. I mean, what about the other 99 exercises that you can do? Don't worry about the one that you can't do. You know, you've got to take it all in. Take all of the concepts and philosophies in, the nutrition, the training, the mindset, everything. It's not about whether, you know, there's one specific exercise or five specific exercises that you can't do. It's what can you change in your life to make it work for you. And there's, you know, I kind of try and touch on all of those aspects that we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I agree with that because I work out while I do have a membership at a gym, I'm not a big fan of going to the gym. And in my own personal life and in my training of clients, I specialize in in-home training, and I work out in a living room that's 6 feet by 6 feet. And I don't have a barbell, but I've got a good stack of dumbbells, and I've made almost every one of your exercises work without having any barbells at my disposal, and I have no cable machines. I've got a pull-up bar, a stack of dumbbells, and a couple of fitness bands, and a jump rope and a couple of kettlebells. And I make it work, and it works. You know, it's just a matter of, like you said, keeping that intensity going and that kind of thing. But back to the question that I asked was that there are people this program won't work for. The one group of people that I actually had in mind that it might not work for would be lazy people. they gotta do the work, right? They gotta do the work.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to actually take action to make something happen. And, you know, buying a bottle of pills that claims you're going to get a perfect, sexy body, you know, just by changing nothing else in your life and taking those pills, I mean, that's just total BS. That's never going to work. So, you got to actually, there is people that it won't work for. It's the people that aren't action takers and that don't do anything. You can't, you know, you definitely can't just read it and expect something to happen. You've got to take action. And and that's why all of the pills and everything don't work, is because a lot of people have that mindset, they're just going to take this pill and it's going to change everything, and that's just not going to happen.
Right. Okay, so on that note, let's talk about timing. How long can someone expect to be training this way before their six-pack, you know, starts to appear?
Well, that all has to do with what level of body fat they're at currently. So how much body fat do they have to lose before maybe the abs become visible? And also, you know, what level they're at in terms of, do they have any background in training already, or are they totally sedentary, or is this totally new to them? Because that's all going to play into how fast some people, you know, are going to get results. Some people are going to see really fast changes, and other people, for example, someone who maybe is already fairly advanced, but there's just a few things they're struggling with. Maybe their diet isn't quite right, or they haven't been utilizing some of the more advanced exercises to really take them to the next level. Let's say it's a guy and they're at like 12% body fat. And, you know, you kind of need to get down into the single, as for a guy, you got to kind of get down into the single digits to really see your abs. So you got to get down maybe like 9%.
Mm-hmm.
So if that may actually take, he could do it in a shorter time period than maybe somebody who's 25% body fat in terms of just being able to see his abs.
Mm-hmm.
But his results are also going to be slower because he's already fairly advanced. And it takes once you get down to fairly low body fat level, it takes a lot more to get to that next level. And, you really got to train a little more advanced. You've really got to eat the right things. And you can still eat some junk, which we can talk about in terms of like cheat days and things like that. But you've got to place nutrition on a pretty high priority in your life to really get super lean. Somebody who's sedentary and has never worked out before and is way overweight, when they start training and actually start watching their nutrition intake, the weight can fall off really fast at first. It's not uncommon for people to, you know, lose a ton of weight in the first couple months that they start, you know, actually trying this stuff. So it's different for everybody.
Yeah. I'm glad you touched on nutrition because, nutrition is just so key. And, I had my beliefs and stuff before I read The Truth About Six-Pack Abs, and quite frankly, you single-handedly changed the way I personally eat. So I just wanted to know if you could share some of your recommendations on nutrition in a nutshell, more or less.
Sure. So I could talk about nutrition for hours. I mean, it's my favorite topic. I love food, and I think that everybody can combine this into their life to still enjoy food, but enjoy it healthy. Enjoy the real taste of natural foods and not processed foods, and still get great results and, you know, and not feel like they have to give up. I mean, sure, you're going to want to give up processed foods, but you can still eat foods that are delicious. And that's one of my whole philosophies. And, you know, for anybody that goes, you know, I'm sure you're going to share the links at the end and that eventually gets on my newsletter list, you'll see that probably about 80% of the topics I write about are nutrition related, because it's just, you know, it fascinates me. And it's the thing that people are most confused about, especially with food, you know, food marketing in today's world is just so ridiculous, and it confuses so many people because of label claims. But let me give one of my sort of biggest level concepts, let's forget about carbs and fat and protein. Let's forget about all the different types of fad diets and all of this. It's not about that. Let's think about it this way: eat foods that are one ingredient, and that's like the biggest concept I give people. So stop buying foods that are in a box or in a package and have like 30 ingredients and chemicals and additives and all this stuff that's designed to fool your body and fool your taste buds and you know, these chemicals that you know, stimulate your cravings and all this stuff. Eat foods that are one ingredient. So that means, you know, if you're going to make a dish, make it with one ingredient foods and chop them up and put them together into a recipe and whatever it may be, but don't buy foods that are already processed and packaged and all this. So that means, you know, eggs, healthy meats, you know, meats that are raised the right way, not from a, you know, a conventional factory farm, like grass-fed meats and things like that. Obviously, fruits and veggies, people don't need to hear, you know, that fruits and veggies are good for you. Everybody knows that. Nuts and seeds, you know, things like avocados and really anything that's just one ingredient. And it's so simple, but if you just focus, if you go to the grocery store, and, I mean, you can look at my cart when I'm at the grocery store, and I'll be standing next to somebody else's cart, and they've got, you know, bags and boxes and all this, you know, all this processed food. And you look at my cart, and it's tons of produce that's all one ingredient. It's tons of eggs. One ingredient, you know, tons of nuts and seeds and, you know, meats and, you know, things that are all one ingredient. And I think that's one of the biggest concepts. If you just pay attention to that, that can do wonders for making people just learn how to eat right and not be fooled by food marketing. I mean, I was in the grocery store the other day, and this just, I mean, it just angers me. There's, because it's fooling people. There's cereal boxes that are sugared cereals that are, you know, I mean, that are, they're like 70% sugar. The if not the first ingredient, you know, the second ingredient will be high fructose corn syrup, and the third ingredient will be just plain sugar. And then there's, you know, 12 artificial colors and artificial flavors.
Yikes.
And they're putting these heart healthy claims on the box. You know, like there was one that was, it said something like reduces your risk for heart disease. And then there was another one that said good for your kid's immune system. And these are sugar cereals that are 60-70% sugar. And even if they have a little bit of whole grain, you know, the main ingredient is still a refined grain, either refined wheat or refined corn. And the reason they get away with this is just because they might add a few antioxidant vitamins or minerals, they can make these claims good for your kid's immune system.
Oh.
And it's just junk food. I mean, this it's not good for anybody's immune system, and it's not good for heart disease either. I mean, I don't care if it has, you know, 3% whole grain in it. If the rest of it's sugar and processed and, you know, refined grains and artificial chemicals, it's not good for your heart. So it's so deceiving, and people fall for this because they look at what's on the front of the box. And that's another concept that I try and teach, is stop falling for things that are on the front of the box and actually read the label and the ingredient label and learn how to decipher what's on an ingredient label. And more importantly, if you follow my rule number one that I talked about with only buying one ingredient foods, then that takes all of that away. You no longer have to be fooled by what's on a box, because you're not buying boxes. So,
yeah, you're stirring up my ire now. Like, the more you talk about it, the more angry I feel, too, when I walk around the grocery store. And just to point out to people that are in the grocery store, I find a good rule of thumb for when I'm shopping as well is to stay in the perimeter. If you have to go up and down the aisles, you're definitely looking at packaged foods that aren't good for you. But if you stay on the perimeter where the vegetables are on one end of the store, and then in the middle is usually the milk and the eggs and that kind of thing, and then at the far end is the meats and the seafood, and that's all I really need is that stuff. When I walk in the grocery store, I almost never walk up and down an aisle. So, I'm totally on board with the way, like I said, the way your concepts and stuff that are in The Truth About Six-Pack Abs, because, and quite frankly as well, your articles. I mean, I've read just an absolute ton of your articles. I remember a long time ago when I first discovered you, I was sitting at my computer reading one of your articles, and it was about margarine. And, you know, on the subject of putting heart-healthy messages on packaged food, you know, believing that I was eating a heart-healthy thing by eating this margarine, I read your article about how margarine was made, and quite frankly, I got up out of my chair right in the middle of reading the article, and I went to my fridge, and I pulled out a brand-new tub of margarine, and I threw it away, brand spanking new. And I've never touched margarine since. I mean, that's the kind of impact that you've had on me and the way I eat. So I just want to stop for a second and say thank you to you for smartening me up.
Sure. Well, another really important point I want to make, that this can take a lot of the confusion out of, you know, calorie counting and all that, because I don't really believe in calorie counting. Now, in the beginning, when somebody's brand new to actually watching their nutrition and actually caring about what they put into their body, you know, knowing how many calories are in things are important. And you know, you really got to start studying labels and all of that. But yeah. But again, like I said, if you follow my rule with buying things that aren't in a box or package, and this, it sort of takes that out of the equation anyway. But here's the thing: if you're eating all, you know, natural unprocessed foods, you know, organic foods, one ingredient foods, your body's getting mostly all of the nutrition it needs. And it's going to automatically regulate your appetite to eat the amount of food that you're meant to eat for maintenance. So you're not going to let me give an example. So say you eat a 1,500 calorie meal from a fast food joint that has no nutrition in the meal. I mean, it's just junk. It's, you know, it's full of trans fat. It's, you know, French fries and a soda and some, you know, deep fried chicken sandwich or fish sandwich or even a burger. And, you know, you got very minimal micronutrients from that meal. Your body needs, obviously, a certain amount of vitamins, minerals, phytochemicals, antioxidants for all of its functions. And you gave it a lot of calories and very little micronutrients. So even though you ate 1,500 calories, it was largely devoid of micronutrients. Your body is still craving those micronutrients, and now you're still going to have an appetite. You're going to have more cravings. You're going to eat more calories until your body feels like it got the micronutrients it needs. And I don't think you can fool your body either. You can't just, like, eat a 1,500-calorie junk food meal and pop a vitamin pill and all is good. You know, there's everything, you know, works synergistically with the phytochemicals in food, the micronutrients, all that. You can't just make up for a horrible diet with a vitamin pill. It just doesn't work that way. So back to what I was talking about with eating all of your foods from unprocessed sources. And, you know, just when you eat this kind of really nutrient-rich diet, your body gets all of the micronutrients it needs. Even if you try to overeat, your body's going to compensate later. And you're not going to have an appetite because you got all the micronutrients that you need. It's like a self-regulating system. I did like an experiment on myself about this, and I wrote an article about it on my site. It was one of the more popular articles because, you know, it wasn't like a super scientific study. You know, it wasn't monitored by a university or anything like that. But for 6 weeks, I purposely tried to overeat. I was trying to eat as much as I could, and believe me, I can gain weight easy. When I went on a cruise this winter, and I just sort of, you know, just let it all go to hell for a week and was just like, and I gained 10 pounds, you know. But I mean, I know my lifestyle. When I got back to training hard, and, you know, I got back to eating like a pretty much perfect diet, and I lost the 10 pounds in like a week. So I was right back to where I was before. But on this experiment that I did on myself, I was, you know, the reason I started it was because I figured, well, it was during the winter and I wanted to go on a muscle building phase. I wanted to actually try and really focus on muscle building for like 6 weeks. So I said, well, I'm going to try and really overeat here so that I have a surplus of calories and, you know, and I can gain muscle easier. What happened was I still refused to eat processed food. I mean, and that means that I really don't eat pasta or anything like that either. You know, it's mostly fruits and vegetables, meats, eggs, nuts, seeds, things like that. When I make an Italian dish, I don't make pasta. I just make a bunch of vegetables and sauce and, you know, maybe bison sausage and cheese and stuff like that. I kind of, you know, I try and stay away from the processed, refined carbs. Well, what happened was, because I was eating all of my food so clean, even though I was trying to overeat, my body would self-regulate and control my appetite later. And I would inadvertently eat less later. And everything just averaged out to where I couldn't overconsume calories, even though I was trying. Because, you know, the body was getting so much nutrition, micronutrients, it was just self-regulating the hormones and appetite and all that stuff. After the 6 weeks of trying to constantly overeat, I had actually like lost a pound. So,
you're kidding me.
But it was all because I wasn't eating any processed food. Now, I guarantee you, if I was trying to overeat and I was eating processed food, it would have been drop dead simple to overeat and I could have gained 20 pounds. Because if you're eating, you know, pasta and breads and cereals, things that tend to stimulate the appetite and make you want to eat more carbohydrates, and you know, junk foods that are going to, you know, trick your body into, you know, craving more food also, it would have been easy to gain weight. But because I was eating all whole unprocessed foods, you know, everything just self-regulates.
All right. Wow, that's really interesting. Really, really interesting. I want to talk for a minute about something else that is a little bit of a bone of contention for me, at least. At least it is now. And that's fat. I hear a lot of people out there saying they're trying to lose weight by cutting all of their fat out of their diet. And at one point, that was something that I used to do too. I remember a long, long time ago, I figured I had 10 pounds I wanted to lose, and I remember I ate plain popcorn for dinner for weeks at a time just in an attempt to get my body fat down by not consuming any dietary fat. So I know Truth About Abs changed all of that for me too, my beliefs in, you know, consuming fat. So please give us your thoughts on this.
Yeah, so your body needs fat, and it's actually one of the most important macronutrients, you know, because it controls a lot of hormone regulation in your body. And people that try and cut fat intake too low, it just automatically backfires, because if you go too low, I mean, it's going to screw with your hormone balance. And, you know, things are going to be out of whack in terms of your appetite and cravings and even, you know, just the balance of hormones in terms of being able to build muscle and burn fat. So fat is actually more important than carbohydrates because your body can break down fat, you know, to produce energy. You can actually live, you know, on fat and protein without carbohydrates. There's some technicalities to that, but you can't live without fat. So I also, it's also much more satiating than, you know, if you eat a high carbohydrate meal versus a higher fat meal. And I'm not talking about unhealthy fats. I'm not talking about, when I say a higher fat meal, I'm not talking about you know, deep fried foods, junk foods that are high in fat. I'm talking about whole foods, you know, high fat foods like nuts and whole eggs and avocados and coconuts and seeds and things like that.
Seafood.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
seafood and even
you know, yeah, like salmon and fatty fish, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
You know, these fats are so important for, I mean, not just the things you hear about in the media, like the omega-3 fats, you know, and your ratio of omega-3 to omega-6. I mean, saturated fat is important too. There's so many important roles of saturated fat in your body. When you get it from natural sources, it's healthy. So just,
right.
I won't go into that discussion now because that one will take an hour in itself. But
right.
So yeah, it helps control your appetite. It helps, you know, maintain hormone levels. It's just so vitally important to get enough fat in your diet. And I'd even go to the extent that, I think I might have read a study about this somewhere, but I would be willing to bet if you did your own study on this, you would find that almost everybody would lose body fat because of it. If you just substitute out a portion of your calories each day and take them in as a healthy fat from, let's say, either avocados or some kind of nuts like pecans, walnuts, or almonds. So say before every meal, a half an hour before your meal, you had a handful of almonds, walnuts, or pecans, or you added, a half of an avocado to your meal and replaced that with whatever your other calories were going to come from, that everybody would lose weight, would lose body fat if that's what they're looking to do, because this is going to totally control your appetite and make you eat less.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
It's also giving your body a lot of micronutrients that it needs, because nuts and avocados are very rich in, you know, vitamins, minerals, and antioxidants. And I've kind of played with this on myself in the past. There was a couple times when I was trying to really cut down body fat for some reason, you know, say I had a trip coming up or something like that. And I actually purposely increased my proportion of calories that were coming from nuts, and it just, the body fat just drops off fast. I mean, because it,
yeah.
You know, I would, have like at night, you know, I would have my snack would be like, those are my three favorites, like walnuts, almonds, and pecans. But almost every nut is healthy for you. So, I mean, get a lot of these random questions like, well, can I eat pistachios because I heard those were fatty and bad for you? No, I mean, they're all good for you. Pistachios
yeah,
are
yeah.
really good for you, too. You know, hazelnuts are good for you. They're all good for you.
Let me ask you this.
So, yeah, I mean, that was like an interesting kind of experiment I've done, too. I mean, I was actually eating more of this, you know, so-called fatty food, and it was actually helping me lose fat faster.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool. Let me ask you this really quickly on the subject of healthy fatty foods and nuts and all that stuff being, healthy for you. And I know this isn't actually a nut, but talk to me for just a quick second about soy.
Yeah, so that is, that's one of the, soy is one of the biggest successes of food marketing that's out there, but it's also one of the biggest deceptions in my opinion. And you're going to hear a lot of debates back and forth on this, but I'll give you my opinion. For one, and these are facts too, and not just opinions. But soy is one of the most heavily laden with pesticides and crops that's grown out there. It's also one of the most genetically modified.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact percentages, but GM soy makes up a large portion of the soy that's out there. And sure, you can find organic products, and that's a slightly different story. But in general, there's a lot of issues with soy. There's a lot of anti-nutrients in soy, and I won't start to list them because some of them have really long chemical names. And there's some problems with soy. I will say that certain types of fermented soy, if they're organic, they may be okay. Again, in moderation, I wouldn't make every meal fermented soy like tempeh or natto or miso, But those can be okay in smaller quantities. But like isolated soy protein, some of the processed soybean oil is one of the worst things in the human diet right now, just because of the way that it's processed under high heat and using solvents like hexane and to extract the remaining soy oil out of the soy when it's pressed. And it oxidizes the omega-6 fats in it, makes them very inflammatory in the body. So there's a lot of reasons why soy is bad for you in general. Also, it tends to, and this is kind of controversial, but it tends to be highly estrogenic in nature. And I've heard, I've actually heard documented stories of several guys that developed gynecomastia, which is another word for man boobs.
Right.
And then they finally found what was causing it is because they were drinking, 2 gallons of soy milk a week, and right. And possibly eating soy in other forms too, because it's so prevalent in our food supply when you're eating processed food.
Doesn't it also promote the adding on of belly fat as well, which is completely counterintuitive to what we're even been talking about all this time today?
Yeah, exactly. So the estrogenic nature of soy can contribute to making it really hard to burn off belly fat in particular, and can possibly trigger the deposition of more body fat if you're really kind of overdoing the soy. And in some of the forms that it kind of concentrates those estrogenic compounds are in like soy protein isolate. But just in general, just know that, to try and stay away from processed soy as much as possible. I'm not going to say that in small amounts, a little edamame here and there, or, a little miso soup here and there, or something is going to really hurt you that bad. I mean, I'm not an extremist in that view, but overall, definitely stay away from processed soy.
Yeah, it's one of the things I completely cut out. And when I was just this side of seeing my abs, just this side of it, then I discovered the whole, paid more attention to the whole soy thing, because I used to love to just sit down and eat like a whole bunch of edamame as a snack, just like every single day. And I was a bit heartbroken when I heard that soy had this controversy around it. And so I thought, okay, well, let's just drop it. It's not the end of the world. It's not the end of my life here. Let's just drop it and see what happens. And, in conjunction with everything else I was doing, I don't know if dropping soy in and of itself, I can give it full credit. I certainly can't, but I think it was probably one of the things that helped in getting my stomach fat down, because I was lean,
yeah.
But I still had that whole, I've still got this little bit of fat on my stomach that just won't go away, So it definitely was one of the things, one of the strategies I employed, and I don't, I believe it helped me, so... another thing I just want to quickly touch on before we move on is I keep hearing people telling me they're going to go on a juice cleanse, or they're going to, start doing those awful meal replacement shake programs, where the ones where they have a healthy shake for breakfast and a healthy shake for lunch and then have a sensible dinner. And it just makes me crazy, because I try to talk to, these people about the concept of drinking your calories, and it just goes in one ear and out the other. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, I think most, most of those things are, the marketers are just trying to come up with some kind of angle that makes it sound like some revolutionary, detox cleanse or whatever that's, just going to, clean out your insides and the fat's just going to start melting off. And I wouldn't fall for any of that. I mean, just focus on eating, like I said, whole, natural, unprocessed foods, organic if possible, and and drink water, drink unsweetened iced tea, drinks that don't have any calories. Juices are probably one of the worst things. If you're looking to lose body fat, the last thing you want to do is be taking in a lot of your calories in the form of juice, because then, it's basically become a processed food. You've taken a fruit, which in its whole form is going to be good for you because it has fiber and it has a lot of other things that work synergistically together to satisfy your appetite, satisfy your body's nutrition needs. when you extract just the juice, you leave all of that behind, and you're just getting the calories. And you might be getting some of the micronutrients, sure, but you're getting a lot of calories and not really getting a lot of, you know, that satiating, you know, helping to control your appetite. So juices, I'd stay away from. Just stick with whole fruits. I mean, think about it. You could guzzle 500 calories worth of fruit juice or some kind of, you know, some kind of juice, even if it's one of these new exotic, you know, goji juice or acai juice or whatever. Doesn't matter. You can guzzle 500 calories of that and still be hungry. But if you tried to eat 500 calories worth of apples, or, you know, I mean, you're going to have to eat like five apples.
Yeah.
And five apples is going to fill you up, as opposed to 500 calories worth of juice.
Yeah, you're just dumping in calories that don't help you with what you need to do, which is eat enough calories to make yourself feel full and still keep your caloric limit at a level that keeps you in a deficit. So juice is just completely counterintuitive to that. And I'm afraid to get you started on this one, but let's quickly talk about diet pop. Diet soda pop doesn't have any calories in it, but.
So that, again, that's another big controversy. I've written a few articles on it, and you just can't argue with the fact that the stuff is just horrendous for your body. It's got, you know, the chemicals it has in it, the artificial sweeteners. Why would anybody want to drink that stuff? Like, why does carbonated chemical water sell so well?
Right.
You know, I mean, if you think about it, it's ridiculous. Why would anybody want to buy, whether it's carbonated chemical-laden sugar water or carbonated chemical-laden artificially sweetened water, why would anybody want to buy that and put it in your body? Because either they've got you addicted to the taste, and that's part of the whole plan is, you know, some of these chemicals do get you addicted. And artificial sweeteners, I can't talk about this in too much length because it would take a while, but artificial sweeteners trick your body, even though you're not taking in any calories, they trick your body into an insulin response, which stimulates your appetite and cravings for more sweet foods or carbohydrate-rich foods later. So it tends to make people consume more calories even though they're drinking a diet beverage. So also another thing is that people that drink diet beverages, and this is kind of a theory, but it may subconsciously make them think that they can eat more food because of that. So I'm drinking a diet soda, so, you know, they're going to eat maybe a bigger portion of food and end up eating more calories. And another thing is that the artificial sweeteners, another problem is that a lot of them are thought to be carcinogenic, and there's, you know, dozens of health problems that can be caused by them. You know, some of that's controversial as to is it proven or not. But in the big picture, who cares? I mean, it's not something we were ever meant to consume. You know, this chemical-laden carbonated sugar water or artificial sweetener water. So why drink it? You know, I would just stay away from it. It's definitely not going to help anyone's health, and it's only going to harm health and possibly even make you more overweight because of some of the hormonal responses that happen from the artificial sweeteners.
All right. Okay, great. Well, thanks for that. And now I quickly want to touch on, you've got a relatively new book out as well that's dedicated just to nutrition, which is called Fat Burning Kitchen, that you co-wrote with Catherine Ebling. So first of all, can you just quickly tell us who is Catherine Ebling and how did you guys come to collaborate on this?
Yeah, so Kat is her nickname, and I came across her. She's been a nutrition writer for years online, and I just really liked her writing. It really aligned with my philosophies and beliefs in nutrition, and so I just contacted her and, you know, asked if she wanted to co-author something together, and I had this idea for this, to just write this whole product around, you know, changing your diet, and that's why we call it the fat burning kitchen. So it's kind of like the concept of, you know, let's clean out all the, let's just, you know, reorganize everything, clean out all of your processed, you know, junk foods, and start filling your kitchen with all the stuff that, you know, we're going to talk about, and, you know, turn your kitchen into a fat burning kitchen. But, you know, we really go into detail about a lot of different types of foods, types of foods where you might be fooled by the marketing of them to think that they're health foods, but they're definitely not, you know, helping you to lose body fat. And, you know, a lot of, on the other side of the spectrum, types of foods that people have traditionally thought are unhealthy that actually could help you. So, you know, we talk about all of that and go into a lot of detail.
Yeah. I mean, the truth about six-pack abs in and of itself has just an absolute ton of nutrition information in it anyway, but fat burning kitchen just, in my mind anyway, just takes that and just jacks it up several more notches and just digs really, really deep into every aspect. And quite frankly, I think it's a must-have if you're really serious about being healthy, not just for weight loss, but for just general being healthy and, you know, living a good long life, disease-free, and you know, making sure you put into your body everything that it knows how to handle instead of is confused by and doesn't know really what to do with and is forced to find nutrients in something that is usually nutrient devoid anyway. So I personally think that the book is excellent. I love it.
Yeah, thank you. And I'll give a little secret out is that if you buy Truth About Abs, this only occurs the day that you buy Truth About Abs. But when you buy Truth About Abs, you get offered Fat Burning Kitchen for a half price discount.
Oh, great. Well, I'll make sure that link is up for sure.
Yeah. So, anybody that just goes to, that's basically a way that if you don't have Truth About Abs yet, that, you know, and you're going to get it, that you can end up getting Fat Burning Kitchen for half price.
Oh, right on. I'm sure everybody's really excited about that. Okay. So, I mean, I think that this is all like just really crazily valuable information we've been talking about today, and Fat Burning Kitchen in and of itself is a very valuable health resource, I think, and I just really can't believe how much information you've been so generous to share with us. But let me ask you one more thing, because I heard a rumor and I want to see if it's true, and sorry to drop this on you and you can negate it if you want, but I heard, because I know Fat Burning Kitchen isn't actually a recipe book. It's more of a general overall health, healthy food, healthy eating book. But I've heard that you've got a recipe book coming out sometime in the future, and I want to know if that's true, because I'm insanely excited at the notion.
Yeah. So I'm actually working on that as well with Catherine, and who's going to be my co-author on that also. And, you know, I'm going to try and throw in a lot of, because I have all kinds of weird and wacky recipes that people just, they hear and they're like, that sounds horrible. And then they try it and they're like, that's amazing. And they're like, and that's healthy too. So, you know, yeah, a lot of the stuff. So I like to cook in ways that I can make almost anything healthy. I mean, I even have a chocolate peanut butter fudge recipe that I have on my website, that's kind of been popular with my readers. And,
yeah, I saw that.
and I swear it's healthy. And, you know, again, it's going to be calorie dense, but the ingredients I use are all the healthiest possible ingredients. I mean, there's no refined sugar. There's no, you know, everything's made with a type of ingredient that makes it as healthy as possible. And that's the way whether it is, you know, something like that, like a dessert or, you know, a snack or a dinner or a breakfast or whatever, I kind of come up with ways to make all my food healthy and really satisfy your body, but be delicious also, because you got to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of people don't understand, is they think that adopting this kind of fitness lifestyle and eating healthy has to be boring and bland, and you've got to eat, you know, chicken breasts and dry chicken breasts and broccoli with nothing on it. And, you know, it doesn't have to be that way. There are so many ways to eat healthy and still have everything be absolutely delicious.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking forward to it, because I'm not very experimental in the kitchen. Like once in a while I'll hit on something and get lucky, but you know, a combination of things. But for the most part, I'm really just not that experimental. So I'm looking forward to getting my hands on some, you know, yummy and healthy and, you know, fat burning recipes to try out for myself, because, you know, I just can't seem to make it happen half the time. But not that I don't try. But so now that we know that the rumor is true, and now I'm really excited, when can we expect it? Is there an ETA on that, or?
I'd say within the next month or so.
Oh, really? That quickly? That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's great. Well, so for anybody listening, as soon as it becomes available, I'll make sure there's something up on the blog ASAP so you guys can grab it as soon as it comes out, because I'm sure there's going to be a mad rush for it when it happens. Hey, Mike, I really can't believe how much stuff we've covered today. You've really, really been very kind with your time, and I know we've been talking for a really long time now, and I've been very, very selfish with your time, but it's just been absolutely fascinating, and I just wanted to thank you for your time.
Sure, no problem. And again, thank you for I'm happy that you reached out to me, and it, you know, it means a lot to me to hear the success stories of people that have, you know, used my materials and it's helped change their life. And, you know, that's what I want to hear, and that's hopefully we can we can help a lot of other people change their lifestyle and have more confidence and live in better health and have more energy and be stronger and look better.
And that was my goal with this interview. So let me just quickly do a little bit of housekeeping here. Just let everybody know where to get your stuff. For anybody who's looking to get Truth About Six-Pack Abs, you could just head over to my usual short link, which is gwnn.me/truthaboutabs. And that's all one word at the end. So gwnn.me/truthaboutabs. If you're looking to grab, get into the video section, you can also get the book at the same time. You can go to gwnn.me/truthaboutabs on video. And again, that's all one word, Truth About Abs on video. So gwnn.me/truthaboutabs on video. And finally, if you're looking, you've already got everything else and you just want to grab Fat Burning Kitchen, you can grab that at gwnn.me/fatburningkitchen. And again, all one word. So gwnn.me/fatburningkitchen. So, and just to hammer the point home, these are all highly recommended by me. I've used them all to the nth degree. They helped me get where I am, and where I am right now is somewhere that I'm very proud to say, you know, is in a great, great place. I'm proud to be seen in a bikini in the summer, and I feel strong and, you know, all that stuff. So, you know, you guys, honestly, this stuff's worth picking up. So anyway, and I'll definitely make sure that you guys know where the recipe book is available once that comes out as well. So, again, Mike, thank you again. I know I've brought up a whole bunch, and I really enjoyed the opportunity to speak with you personally, finally, and sharing your strategies with everyone here at GirlWithNoName.com. And I know I can speak on everyone's behalf when I say this was highly appreciated, and you've given us some very useful information to go forward with on our path to getting our own six-pack abs. So, again, thank you so much.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say that I'm really proud of the transformation that you made. I saw your pictures, and you look absolutely great now.
Oh, well, thank you. That means a lot coming from you. I appreciate it. So, again, I'll let you go because I know we've been yakking forever. And with one final thank you.
All right. Thanks, Jackie.
Okay. Take care.
Bye.